What's up, Beardos? You're listening to a very special, exceptionally good, marvelously decent, stupendously satisfactory, awesomely average bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't let me answer the question first time. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
About beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And you already know we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
You can find all of our previous episodes at beardvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing beardvegans@gmail.com or just leave a comment below.
In today's special Patreon-only episode, we're going to be reviewing Call to Rescue, a film featuring a unique, non-graphic window into the lives of rescued animals.
Yeah, Paul, this is a very different film for us.
It is. It was refreshing and, dare I say, spoiler alert, I enjoyed it, Andy.
I would say it was overall quite delightful.
quite delightful, exceptionally good, stupendously good. Yeah. All those adjectives.
All that good stuff. So, you know, before we do anything, Paul, if you know, we have to thank everyone, because if you're listening to this episode, that means you have access to this through our Patreon account. That means you're supporting us with at least $1 a month. Some people going way above and beyond even the $10 limit that we've set. So thank you to everyone, no matter what amount you contribute. It's been real fun to grow this whole account with you.
Yes, thank you so much. We very, very much appreciate it.
And actually, literally like an hour ago, Paul bought a new microphone for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been borrowing the commentist microphone for a while now, which is what we were using to record way back when we started in my humble apartment in West Hartford. But since then, anytime Andy and I recorded together, we would have to borrow a microphone because I only had one XLR microphone, and now we have two, so we are able to record together without borrowing equipment.
Yeah, we each have like our own individual microphones that we use when we are recording separate from each other, and we needed to upgrade the rare moments when we record together, we needed to upgrade that setup. So we are piece by piece doing that and
block by block.
Yeah. Couldn't do it without all of the Beardos out there. So thank you once again. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. So before we actually get to this review, I found a cool news story that we were going to include in last week's normal episode, but because it's from June 20th, which is just a mere 5 days ago from when this was recorded, pulling back the curtain.
Yeah.
But we realized that this article kind of goes much better with the movie. So I'm just going to quickly go over this news article from Forbes.com, of all places, titled "Meet the Former Livestock Agent Who Started an International Vegan Food Business." Ooh. Going to read a little bit from this. And maybe, Andy, this might be a news segment because it's not really like current news as much as it is just highlighting a cool vegan story. So this is the new segment for the Patreon only, apparently, called Highlighting Cool Stories. So let me read a little bit from this. Wally Fry, great name, had just finished building an industrial piggery. He was
great word.
Great word, terrible thing. He was proud of the work he'd done on the project with his construction firm in his native South Africa and went along to inspect the now operating facility. What he witnessed changed him forever. Thousands of pigs, who are as smart as dogs, were crammed into barren concrete pens. Recognizing that these curious, playful, and sentient beings were destined to spend their lives suffering in pain and misery before being transported to a slaughterhouse where they would die, kicking and screaming in terror, Fry experienced an epiphany. "Something inside me broke," he says. "It was 1987, and this incident was the final straw that prompted the entrepreneur's transition to cruelty-free living on a journey that had previously involved a stint as a livestock agent selling goats from the family's farm." So basically, after deciding to become vegetarian and then later vegan, Fry started kind of creating his own meat substitutes. And he realized that his friends and families also enjoyed these things. And he was like, I should try and sell some of these. So he started a business, the Fry Family Food Company, FFFC, in 1991. And at the time, there was virtually no market for vegan food in South Africa. So let me continue reading from this article. In 2009, its first custom-built factory in Durban was opened. The 5,000 square meter premises, which includes a full-time training facility, currently employs more than 400 staff who can do various courses to upskill at no cost. We've chosen staff over total mechanization of our process purely because we love the fact that we can employ people that really need the income, says Fry. Some of our staff are responsible for feeding more than 13 people in their household, as over 50% of South Africans are unemployed. Our staff are an extension of our family. Some of them have been with us for over 20 years. We run an ethical business, our staff are paid well, and their working conditions are excellent. You can tell because when you walk into our factory, you'll usually be met by beautiful singing and sometimes dancing too. So currently, the Fry Family Food Company, they have 35 products such as schnitzels, pies, roast strips, coconut ice cream, and cereal mixes. And from some of the pictures I saw, it's like a lot of different fake meat products. They're sold in approximately 12,000 stores in more than 30 countries and will be launching in the U.S. later this year.
Paul, did you see this picture though?
Oh, I did not see that picture. And he's flipped around his computer and showed me a hamburger, a vegan hamburger that is decorated with olives and pickles and cucumbers to look like a face with a head and eyes and a tongue sticking out. It's very adorable.
It's the front image on the Fry's webpage. You know, Fry's is a brand that I've seen friends from elsewhere in the around the globe. I'm not sure if it was the UK or Australia or what, but...
You've seen Fry's from friends?
Fry's from friends from the Fry Family Food Company. Friends of the Fry Family Food Company that have posted this. This is kind of like their Gardein-type brand. So I'm excited to try them when they expand to the U.S. They have a ton of different stuff looking through. I'm curious to try the ice cream especially, but... I am just tickled by the categories because they have burger, sausages, but then they have things that are breaded, but apparently they're called crumbed.
Professor Crumbed.
That's what happens when Professor Crumb kills you in the laboratory with the crumb maker.
Professor Crumb, is that from Harry Potter? Professor Plum is from Clue. I feel like Professor Crumb is a Harry
Just
Potter.
Just go with
character.
It, Paul.
Well, because at first I was like, that's a Clue reference. And then I was like, is it a Clue reference? I don't know. Who knows? But
who killed Harry Crumb? Isn't that a John Candy movie?
It seems like a crossover of both of the things that we were just talking about.
Yeah. Oh, it's called Who's Harry Crumb? Starring John Candy from 1989, has a solid 27% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That'll be next month's bonus review.
This is what the people are tuning in for.
Yeah. So yeah, it's I don't know. I just wanted to highlight this story. It seemed cool. It's something that a company that I didn't know about personally. It's cool to hear about this thing that started in 1991, the great year that I was born. Like to have these vegan products, you know, it's like I take for granted all the stuff that I have today, all the great products that are available to me today. I'm very fortunate in that regard, but it's cool to hear about someone that's been doing this for so long.
Yeah, damn, that is pretty amazing. And also, I think it's great that Katrina Fox, who is the person who wrote this article, she also runs the Vegan Business Talk podcast, and it's awesome that she now has this platform at Forbes. I'm seeing articles constantly coming out from her that are really sort of injecting this world that otherwise doesn't seem to have a huge vegan presence with all of these articles, and just thinking about the ripple effect that can be caused by, you know, this particular voice getting such a platform, I think is really, really fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. And the last thing I guess I'll say is that it also seems like the company, they support different campaigns and nonprofits like Veganuary, which we've talked about on the show, the Sea Shepherd. They support feeding schemes in South Africa, and they're initiating meat-free Mondays in South Africa and in Australia. They're working towards that too. So they're not just, you know, putting out food products. They're doing some other advocacy stuff too.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
All right. And that concludes the inaugural segment of Highlighting Cool Stories with Paul and Andy.
Thank you, Paul. With that said, let's dive in to our review of Called to Rescue.
I grew up in a typical household where you have pets, and it's just like, oh, you have a pet, but at the same time you're eating meat. So like there's no connection of the two.
To try to get people to understand, to recognize, to acknowledge that disconnect we have with certain species. and to examine with themselves as to why that is.
The cruelty and suffering, excuse me, that I witnessed at that auction, it's very difficult to even talk about it.
I'm gonna ask you to look away.
So that was from the trailer of Called to Rescue. And before we go any further, let us say that this film actually came out in 2016, although all the actual premieres were happening all the way until late 2017. So it still is kind of new in the vegan film landscape. And one of the reasons we're talking about it now is because it very recently became available for free on YouTube. So you can find Called to Rescue, the full film, on YouTube, or you can just go to calledtorescuefilm.com, and that will have all the links that you need to find it for free. So I think we both say we would highly recommend checking out this film, right?
I think so. Yeah, especially because it's so easily available.
Yeah, there's no graphic footage. It's actually a part of their thing specifically, and even in their advertising, that there is no graphic footage. So if you're looking for a nice, easy, breezy hour and 13-minute watch, go give that a watch before you listen to our review. But if not, proceed with caution, because there will be no spoiler section whatsoever. But so, Paul, let me read the plot synopsis from IMDb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How the union of chance encounters, inner callings, and the unconditional love shared between humans and animals is changing the course of countless lives.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very kind of hippy dippy.
Also, I feel like makes it, and I don't mean this as a dig on the movie, but it makes it seem more like, it makes it seem like there's more like a romantic plot or something like that. And this is a movie that does not really have a narrative plot to it.
Yeah, not really.
Which
no roadmap, Paul.
Okay,
all right. Let's we'll parse that out in a second. Let me finish introducing this film.
You saw those action figures too, Andy.
All right. So as I said, this originally came out in 2016, and April 2018 is when it became available for free on YouTube. This is directed by Logan Call and Naomi Sophia Call.
Logan Paul?
Not Logan Paul. The recently vegan Logan Paul. It features 15 different farmed animal sanctuaries, including some of the bigger names in that scene: Animal Place, Farm Sanctuary, The General Barn, Harvest Home, and Woodstock Farm Sanctuary, just to name a few. And it interviews a lot of the folks from those sanctuaries. Some are names that I think will be familiar to a lot of people, and others were very new to me. I think especially because a lot of them were sanctuaries from the Pacific Northwest in the United States, so not an area I get to particularly often. But it does include names like Gene Bauer, Ellie Lax, Erica Meyer, and a disappointingly pianoless Will Tuttle.
Well, I got something to say about that later, Andy, but we'll save that for our final thoughts and funny stuff that we found. And Moby, too. Moby, in addition to Will Tuttle, had kind of like this weird, just like a couple minutes of footage.
But did you notice in the credits that 95% of the music was from Moby?
Oh, that's what I was going to say later. And Will Tuttle. He had a bunch of
I think
of
Will
music
Tuttle
too.
Had like the opening credits or something.
We had a couple in there.
Yeah,
had
all
a
couple right, in there. All right, Paul. Okay. All right. So anyway, this film, Paul, I think this film, you could essentially say it's almost like visiting a farmed animal sanctuary without actually making the trip.
Yeah, complete with the, because I know some farm animal sanctuaries are like in the tours, you know, they'll give you the like the educational bit, and yeah, like you were just saying, that this seems like it's a more detailed educational section of the tour that you would get at a farm animal sanctuary.
Yeah, so it spends about 20 minutes letting a lot of the people from these sanctuaries kind of talk about their story, talk about their transformation or their change of heart, and then most of the rest of the film is dedicated to these segments that are, this is the cow segment, and there'll be a little title card with text. There's no graphic footage at all that says this is what happens to cows in the meat industry. And then it'll show some cows and the sanctuary workers talking about, you know, the cows, giving more information. And now here's the chicken segment. All that stuff leads to the very end. There's a brief environmental section that kind of wraps up with some closing thoughts. And that's the whole film right there. So Paul, this film, to me, the closest thing I could compare it to is Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey mm-hmm. Home.
Yep.
Because that also focuses mostly on the sanctuary workers and the animals, and focuses on animals that are alive, doing well, and thriving in sanctuary environments.
And in terms of the humans, this movie had many former farmers turned animal sanctuary and like sharing those stories. Like you said in the beginning, that's kind of what that was highlighting, which I think is cool. It's cool that it highlights that. But yeah, it's similar to Peaceable Kingdom as well.
Former farmers known as FFs.
FFs.
FFs that become friends of Fry's Family Food Company. All right. So, Paul, so this is notably different because they really do not use graphic footage. They only tell you what happens, either in title card format or some of the people they interview will describe what happens to these animals and why the industry does whatever it is that they do to the various animals. How did this film work for you? Did you enjoy this film? Is it a worthy addition to someone's viewing library as someone who's seen, you know, we've seen a crap ton of documentaries. So maybe just the fact that we've seen so many, it's sticking out a little bit more to me. But how did this work for you? What are your overall thoughts before we dig into any nitpicks that we might have?
Well, like one of our main discussions in our review of it is going to be this discussion about the graphic footage, because not only did they not include graphic footage, but I don't believe they included any even non-graphic footage of slaughterhouses and those sorts of things. Like besides the one rescue, yeah. I don't think anything was filmed at locations where the graphic footage would have even been.
So you're talking about like a pig in a gestation crate or hens in battery cages, yeah. Something that's not bloody, but still hard to watch.
Yeah. I don't think they included any of those.
None of that was present in this film whatsoever.
And I'll say, so this is how I feel about that, because that's what you asked, and I'm going to answer your question like I always do. So I think 90% of the movie, I was like, I'm glad that they're not showing this footage, and I don't, for what they're trying to do, I don't think it's necessary to show this footage. That's how I felt for 90% of the movie. There were a few parts, though, because I will say this, to the movie's credit, they gave me a few animal agricultural facts that I did not know.
Yeah.
And those parts, I was like, oh, I did not know this, and I wish I had a visual for it.
Yeah.
And
you sick bastard.
No, like for instance, I'll give an example of something, and I don't even necessarily mean the graphic stuff, because there was a few graphic facts that they gave me, and I'll go over these that I didn't know, but there were a few non-graphic ones. For instance, when they were talking about sheep, and they were talking about this I did not know, how sheep are not, they were not originally white, and they were kind of bred to be white because their white wool would be easier to dye. And then this I did kind of know, how they're bred, or they naturally shed their wool, but they've been bred to not shed their wool so that it makes it more convenient for the people that have to shear them. And so if they don't get sheared, then they have, like, they just keep growing it, and they'll most likely overheat and die. And like, that's the kind of thing where I was like, they could have shown a sheep that had, you know, like an excess amount of wool.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing where I was like, this, it's uncomfortable, but it's not graphic, mm-hmm. I think. And what I was thinking is, I was like, well, if I wanted this visual, I wonder if someone that did not know a lot of the other facts about chickens or cows or what have you, or like the geese or the ducks, I wonder if people watching it would be like, oh, I want to see what this looks like. Not because I want to enjoy it, but it's like, it would, I wonder if it would be beneficial to them. So that was something I wondered.
Yeah, that is, to me, the possible biggest downside of not showing the footage of these things happening, is that someone that's watching it and has never been privy to this footage. And I know that we tend to think everyone has seen this, even if just for like a few minutes on some YouTube video they clicked on, or their friend was like, watch this thing. But from my experience showing people footage like that, there's still a ton of people that haven't seen that stuff.
Yeah.
I think especially of kind of the lesser known things like the wool shearing or the down feathers from the ducks, things of that nature. And so I think that someone could watch this and say, I think they're exaggerating, or they're making this up, or they're trying to just make it sound worse than it is. And they're describing it to be worse than it is. And if they actually showed it, we would see it's not that bad. Like, that could potentially be a downside. But I guess the counter would be, well, they can go look up that themselves if they're really that curious about it. Like, it's not that hard, but...
Yeah, but someone that's actively trying to resist doing this is probably not going to, you know, or I shouldn't say probably, but maybe not going to be like, oh, let me look up this thing that I really, that I don't want to be true.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. And if it's someone that's just sort of passively taking this information, maybe their friend had them watch the thing and they're just sort of doing it as a favor or just to go along with the group, they're probably someone that's less likely to then go do follow-up research on it if they don't seem to care too much either way.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so that's how I felt about the graphic footage. Like, again, 90% I was like, good, I'm glad this is different than I don't need to see all this stuff. And then the 10% of me wondering, like, there's these few parts that I wanted to see something. So what? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because I've seen so much of that footage already... it was a relief to watch something that didn't have any of that, you know, where, as we talked about on the last regular episode, we will be reviewing Eating Animals. And from what I gather, there must be some graphic footage in there because it's really going into all of that. I don't think it's going to be a, you know, an Earthlings or Dominion type situation. So I'm curious to see it, but I'm also a little bit dreading it because I'm like, how much do we need to subject ourselves to this? So it was nice to just sit down and watch this. I watched this along with my partner and I was like, hey, do you want to watch this thing with me? Because we're going to be reviewing it tomorrow. And she seemed a little hesitant. And then I read the description. She's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. Like, it was a nice thing to watch while you're eating some tacos and corn on the cob, you know, like I didn't find it to be a emotionally challenging thing. Like, even the descriptions they give were not super graphic, and I found myself way more going, oh, they're so cute.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was my reaction, like, look, oh my god, look at that piglet. It was never this feeling of heartbreak. And I don't know, maybe that's not the best thing, or maybe this is just good to, and we can talk about this as we always do at the end, who is this for, how would you recommend it? But maybe it's not supposed to be the only thing someone takes in. Maybe it's a companion piece to an Earthlings or a Forks Over Knives or a Cowspiracy or something like that. But I think that a lot of people, you know, I loved Peaceable Kingdom because it focused so much on, like, the inner lives of these animals. And I found that just to be such a refreshing thing. And I think that a lot of people would be receptive to this film and that they would relate because they do show... a wide variety of white people talking about, you know, why they change their views on things. And they even have, like, the cop at the Gentle Barn.
The hippest cop of all time. With his, like,
that fucking mustache.
Mustache, baseball cap. Definitely had, like, full sleeve tattoos.
Definitely hashtag not a cop. He's, like, the undercover guy. Yeah, I mean, you know, they have this wide range of people that's talking about how, like, their hearts and minds were opened up to the plight of animals through the interaction with animals. So, you know, hopefully seeing that film could have the same effect on someone else, even if they're not there with the animal. I found that, I don't know, I think it could be a really affecting film. I think that because it is different enough, and also I think pretty competently made, you know, it doesn't have the National Geographic money that we love, right? But it certainly was very well made. It, you know, one of my complaints about Peaceable Kingdom was that it felt old. Like, the aspect ratio was, like, square, right? Or it was, like, it wasn't... Yes, Paul?
Such a nit to pick.
But people
notice that now. I know what you mean.
People notice that now. And it just, yeah, like, whatever cameras Peaceable Kingdom used, like, it was probably the best technology at the time, but now it looks really dated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that combined with the sort of a little more sort of hippy-dippy feeling that you get from Peaceable Kingdom with the music and the quotes and all that stuff, this one felt like that was way toned down. It felt like it was contemporary. It felt like it was, like, of our time period. And I feel like people would be more receptive to that. You know, they had a couple nice drone shots, some nice aerial footage, and some really beautiful photography of these animals, cinematography. You know, so I think all of that combined makes me think that this is a really worthy addition to anyone's catalog of films, that if someone came along and said, I want to go vegan, or I'm curious, what 3, 4, 5 documentaries should I watch? This, I think, would be in it.
I will say, spoiler alert for my ending feelings about this, I would say that I would agree with you, Andy, unless you have a farm animal sanctuary that you are able to visit yourself with that person.
Yeah.
And then I would say, go ahead, bring them there. One last thing about the graphic footage. This is a very specific thing, but when they were talking about the ducks and geese, and specifically when they were talking about the foie gras, and they were describing the process, in your head were you like, ooh, Anthony Bourdain said that this isn't the case?
I was definitely thinking about Anthony Bourdain saying that, like, most foie gras isn't made like that. And any chef worth a damn wouldn't purchase that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Bourdain would have watched that and said, well, you're exaggerating it, mm-hmm. and you're turning a few bad apples into the entire industry.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that was interesting. And I was like, I wonder if Andy's thinking about this, too. And we're watching it at the same time, so maybe you were thinking about it at the same time.
Yeah, connected. We definitely were. Okay, let's talk about some other things that we liked about the film before we get into our criticisms of this film, of which I have many, actually.
Ooh.
Despite the fact that I'm heaping overwhelming praise upon it, there are things that I wish they excluded or did differently.
That's interesting, because, Andy, I don't have that many.
Oh, all right. Well, so let's talk about some things that we like. I have a few quotes that I pulled out that I thought were really good. I think that things that other people say in the film at points almost contradict these quotes, but some of, like, the closing remarks I really liked. I liked, you know, I have to say, while we're talking about this, Paul, I was trying to make notes of who was saying what. You know, I was watching it with my partner, so I wasn't pausing it and making notes like I normally would. So I was just kind of, you know, quickly throwing them down on my phone. A lot of these people felt very interchangeable. It was hard to keep track of everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, really the only ones that I remembered were the ones that I've, like, either already met or already are in a lot of other documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a lot of someone said or someone from this sanctuary said kind of stuff, but someone said the quote, you know, we are, you know, in regards to sanctuaries and all that, we are saving the world, not because we are saving animals, because the animals are saving animals. And I love that, because within this movement, there's so often the rhetoric of animals are voiceless, they don't have a voice, so you'll never stop hearing mine, all of those things that you see. And animals do have a voice. We just don't listen to them. They don't communicate to us in English or, you know, whatever language anyone else is speaking. But they communicate with you know, their actions, their movements, their sounds, all of these things. And so I liked that, at least with this person who said it, there wasn't this, like, savior complex of, like, mm-hmm. I am saving animals and I'm doing such good things for the world. It was like, I'm here doing the work on behalf of the animals. And people come here, and by meeting these animals and truly getting to know them and listening to them, so to speak, these animals are saving themselves and their kin. I thought that was such a powerful idea.
No, I wrote that down too, and I do think that that's one of the, like, the best points that the movie has, because I so rarely see this, like you said, in the other films. And yeah, just, like, giving the credit to the animals. And a few times they made this point that was kind of like, these animals are ambassadors for other animals, and I'm just taking care of the animals, but people are coming here and making the connection with the animals, not with me. And that's what's helping. That's what's saving these other animals. So yeah, I thought that was really cool, and I'm glad that they made that point or said that idea more than once.
Yeah, so I definitely appreciate that. And I think the film in many ways is modeling that. The film is like, you know what, we don't need to show animals in horrible pain and suffering to get this point across that they're individuals. Yes, we're going to talk about the situations that led many of them to be at these sanctuaries, but, like, mostly for me, this film was just about, like, exposing people to these animals and seeing them interact and seeing that different chickens are acting in different ways. And after the big rescue that they showed at Animal Place, there was the one chicken who was really scared, right, and mm-hmm. hiding. And it was like, oh, these birds aren't all the same. Like, this bird has a lot of extra fear for whatever reason. Maybe they just have extra anxiety. Maybe they were treated extra bad by the humans that they had previously come into contact with. And just sort of showing that you know, animals, they play differently, different animals play differently together, and it lets you see that they're individuals with personalities and these, like, inner lives, these rich inner lives. And so I think in many ways, not all the time, but in many ways, this documentary called To Rescue models that idea, which I thought was also very powerful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Another part that I liked about it, and I think this will open up a little bit discussion as well, I liked that they had throughout the film, I thought there was a reoccurring rhetoric that was many of these people had this aha moment with just like a single animal, and that's what it took. And like, there was the person that with the tennis ball that was really bad at tennis, so his tennis ball kept going into the cow field, and they had this connection with this one cow, and that kind of changed them. And then there was another person that was like, that had the quote, "The sanctuary started with my love for a single pig." So it's like, it was a lot of stories about like one connection can change your entire life. And it got me thinking, like, how can we get more people to have these aha moments? And this film definitely made me want to take my like non-vegan friends and families to animal sanctuaries, because I'm like, I'm wondering, because I've only been to animal sanctuaries with other vegan friends, and I'm wondering, like, would that happen to many non-vegan people if I brought them to an animal sanctuary?
I think it's possible. I think it would definitely help plant a seed. And, you know, I'm trying to think if I've been on, you know, I've been on like a handful of sanctuary tours at different sanctuaries, and different sanctuaries do it differently. Some are a little more heavy-handed. But I find that in general, sanctuary tours are pretty non-judgmental in that, I mean, maybe someone, if they weren't vegan, they would feel judged if they were there. But for the most part, the tour guide is just sort of talking about the scenario. The tour guide isn't like, "And who here is not a vegan? You? So because you decide to drink milk, this baby doesn't have their mom." You know, it's not like that. Yeah. It's just sort of saying, like, in the dairy industry, mothers, you know, are separated from their children almost immediately or after 24 hours or whatever it is. And so I find that it's like a good way for someone to sort of go and absorb, and they can generally be in a group of people. It's not a one-on-one thing where they feel a lot of pressure. They can sort of even stand in the back and just observe.
Yeah.
So I think it is a really low key way to get people to open their hearts to these animals. And I think that what you brought up, the idea that there's, you know, like the one animal that turns someone on to this whole message, is really important, because, you know, we often as advocates focus on the immensity of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this many billions of animals die, 56 billion worldwide, as they say in the beginning of this documentary, and like nine or 10 billion land animals in the U.S. alone every year. And it's horrible, but it's also just this, it's in the ether. It's out there. It's a huge number. It's incomprehensible. You couldn't imagine 10 billion animals standing in a field somewhere, but you can imagine, you know, Edward the pig that you've met and you spent time with, and you know that Edward loves belly rubs and like chasing after a soccer ball or something like that. So I think that is really powerful. And you see a lot of, or at least some of the advocacy groups adopting that in their leafleting techniques, mm-hmm. where they start to focus on naming animals and then telling their story in addition to the numbers and the statistics.
Yeah, because the majority of non-vegans, it's like we all have friends and family that are non-vegans that'll be like, "Oh no, that bird outside is injured," or this. Yeah, it's like most people, when they see the one animal, when they can actually see them, they make that connection. And I you know, this film does define speciesism, which I thought
speciesism.
It does. It defines it pretty quickly, and I was happy. I was happy to see that. I don't know why, but for some reason, when I started watching this film, you know why? It's because we've been watching so many health films, but I was like, I wonder how vegan this film is going to be.
Yeah.
And then they define speciesism pretty quickly, and I'm like, okay, I think they're going to be promoting veganism in this movie.
Yeah, and the word vegan is used a few times.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like almost most prominently by the cop.
The cop.
There was one sanctuary worker that was talking about, you know, vegan products being more available now than ever before, but...
Is that cheesemaker?
It wasn't the cheesemaker.
I thought that was a cool story, too.
Yeah, no, that was also really cool. I know we mentioned the Soledad Goat Sanctuary on the podcast briefly a long time ago, but it was cool to see more of their story as well.
Yeah.
On I guess on that thought about the value of sanctuaries and the value of meeting the one animal, one of Moby's contributions to this film was this sort of pondering on the value of the sanctuary. And there is certainly a school of thought in the movement, I will say, I guess it's more like the utilitarian school of thought, that's saying, look how much time and effort and money has to go into running a sanctuary to save, you know, 10 to 100 whatever animals to care for them. And can't you save so many more animals by donating to an advocacy group that will make new vegans so that there aren't animals that have to be put into these rescued and saved and housed by these sanctuaries, which I don't know how I necessarily feel about that, you know, because there's like sort of the, like, I don't entirely disagree with that, right? If we're thinking about how are we spending our money, isn't it better to make, like, you and I are team vegan education. It's best to make new vegans. It harkens back to our discussion about the open rescues.
Yeah.
And my point of view was, I'll never be upset about someone removing an animal from a place of abuse, right? And I think you kind of kept coming back to, well, yeah, but also wouldn't that time just be better spent making new vegans instead?
Yeah.
Right? You heartless monster. So I guess this is sort of like almost a recontextualizing of that argument, because maybe it's different because this is generally a legal thing to do. It's all on the up and up, and people likely aren't going to go to prison because of it. Although I'm sure many, or at least some of the animals in these sanctuaries were taken by means that are not entirely legal. But I don't know. I thought this was interesting because then after Moby says all of that, I was like, that's a weird thing to include in this. And then he pivots and says, but once you start to think about these animals as ambassadors for their various species, and you see the power in that, and you see their power to transform others, then it becomes worth it. Which I thought was interesting. I don't know. Did you have any thoughts on that?
It's funny you bring that up, because I think as we've had these, especially in the last, within like the last four episodes, I feel like that we've, four or five episodes that we've recorded, we have been having a lot of discussions about what's the most efficient use of our time. Shouldn't we not do these things that aren't effective, or if we can do something else that's more effective, shouldn't we do that? And I think in general, during those discussions, I have been of the more utilitarian approach and being like, let's figure out what's efficient. Oh, this thing isn't efficient, then we shouldn't be doing that. But I mean, after watching this movie, and I don't know, maybe being faced with, you know, in the same way that the non-vegan is faced with these animals that they're contributing to their slaughter, me being faced with like the animals in a different sense of them being like, but Paul, you don't want us to be saved. It's like, I also can't disagree that I think that these are good things, even if it is costing a lot of money and it's a lot of time and it's a lot of effort. And I can't imagine that, or I have to imagine that it is incredibly difficult to run a sanctuary, probably under the constant threat of like, oh, I hope we get some donors so that we don't shut down tomorrow. But I don't know. I just can't deny the, what I see as the great benefit of having these sanctuaries, even beyond just rescuing those specific animals, like you were saying, and like Moby said, having them as ambassadors for other animals. It's like, I can't deny that. I do think that that's a great use of these resources. So I don't know, maybe I might need to go back and listen to those episodes that we recorded 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I wonder if I would change my opinion about some of that. I mean, we were definitely talking about some different tactics. Also, I feel like one thing that's different maybe about animal sanctuaries is they're not, I feel like animal sanctuaries, I can't imagine the general public being like, oh, those dang sanctuaries. Like, I feel like it would be weird to have if you had a negative opinion, like a general public negative opinion about animal sanctuaries. So I feel like that makes it different too a little bit, because I know we were talking about, you know, some tactics that promote negative public opinions, but I don't know. Yeah, I wonder if I would change my views about this.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that the, you know, one of your big sticking points was that it gave the public a negative impression of veganism and rescuing animals and all of that. So I will grant you that is definitely a different circumstance to consider. So, but yeah, I don't know. I guess that's something that I'll still continue to kick around in my brain. But I do think that there is value in farmed animal sanctuaries, even if it's just as a place of retreat and sanctuary and respite for vegans to go and recharge their batteries. For me, yeah, personally, the first few times I visited a farmed animal sanctuary, it was great when I was there, but I was really sad when I left because it, like, actually putting a face to the animals that I was trying to save while I was doing advocacy work made me really sad because it made me think about those animals in the horrible situations that the billions of others actually are. So I've gotten over that hump finally, but it was actually like a really hard thing to deal with the first few times that I went to one.
I wonder if in our advocacy, like in our education, we should start encouraging people to go to animal sanctuaries, like in the pamphlets that you give out, or when you talk to people being like, hey, there's this animal sanctuary that's 45 minutes away. I would encourage you to check this out. It's a great place to actually meet these animals face to face. I don't say like you're going to feel so bad that you're going to go vegan right when you see them, but just encouraging them to go. I wonder if that's something that we should start doing.
Yeah, I think if it's something that's within, 45 minutes would probably be the max I'd recommend unless someone was really interested. But I think there are probably some people that, you know, it's a family like, oh, we'll go see some animals for the day, and they're not even realizing what exactly they're going to be getting into. I've been to the Gentle Barn a few times, the one in California, and, you know, I didn't get a strong advocacy message from them. You got a little talk before you entered into the barnyard, and there was a few attendants that were around to explain animal stories, but it wasn't heavy-handed at all. And I wish that it was a little more heavy-handed. And then you have ones like Animal Place that really kind of lay it on, or Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. They have the banners all around with quotes, right? That's them.
I think so. I've only been to Catskill for the shindig, but I know Woodstock, they do the tours.
Yeah.
And I feel like they are good about telling the animal stories.
We did the Woodstock tour together.
Yeah, we did. That's right.
Yeah, we had pancakes first.
We did. A lot of all-you-can-eat pancakes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm mixing up some of the sanctuaries that I've been to, but a few of them will have...
I've been to so many sanctuaries.
It's a rough life to be me. a lot of them will have banners up that have quotes. A lot of them have the Moby quote. You know, you can look an animal in the eyes and say they don't, whatever. I don't know.
Probably the glass, like if slaughterhouses had glass.
Yeah. Paul McCartney and all that stuff. So, I don't know. I don't know why I got off on that tangent, but overall, I think that Moby's musings on the value of a sanctuary from a monetary perspective are worth considering.
Definitely.
Did you have any other positives before we move on to the negative?
I'll say this, Andy. We've seen young T. Colin Campbell. We've seen young Dr. Esselstyn. And now we've seen young Gene Bauer.
What a hunk.
What a hunk.
I don't know. I kind of prefer a silver fox face. I'll say my final positive quote that I really liked was from, I believe his name is Jay from the Gentle Barn. And it's in the conclusionary segment of the film, like the final 5 minutes that's supposed to really give you that inspirational wallop to push you to go visit their website and learn how to take action. We'll talk about that in a second. And he said, you know, a lot, something along the lines of, there's a lot of people that see what we do and they think, oh, it takes all this money and all this time and I don't have the space and the land and all of these things. But realize you are your own sanctuary. And when you go vegan, the animals you save, you think about them sort of being in your sanctuary. And I thought that was a really beautiful thought.
That was really nice. I got a couple more things, actually. One was the few facts that I did not know about before going into this movie.
Yeah.
There was the one that I did not know pigs were bred to be pink. Did you know that?
I feel like someone must have told me at some point at the many sanctuaries I visited, Paul. I'm sure I have glossed over that fact at some point.
I did not know that veal was apparently created by the animal industry.
So I made a note about that because I know that the dairy industry certainly benefits from being able to sell these young male calves as veal. But I was like, is that really sort of pushing the envelope in the description about, you know, the reason that veal exists. Because, you know, we think of the modern dairy industry has not been around for all that long,
yeah.
Right? But then shortly before the recording of this episode, I was looking up the history of veal, and it seems like that's a correct assumption.
Oh, that it's only been around relatively recently?
Well, it's been around for at least 100 years. 100 years ago is when the idea of veal was brought to the U.S. from, I think, Italy and maybe France. Sorry, I didn't write it down. But that it was kind of a thing that, like, farmers were like, you know, as dairy began to get more popular and cheese and ice cream and all that stuff, they found that they needed more dairy than they needed cows, you mm-hmm. know, and through that, then they started to realize that they could, you know, sell these young calves, these mostly male young calves, at a premium. And so the rise of veal was sort of tandem with the rise of dairy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that idea of the dairy industry creating veal, to me, I was like, I don't know if that's actually what happened, but it seems like that's actually what happened. So
yeah. That's pretty wild. Also,
I didn't realize that schnitzel is veal.
I don't know what schnitzel is. So. I know the word, don't know the food.
We'll let it be a mystery. But I do believe that Fry's Family Food Company makes vegan schnitzel. So,
And actually, along those same lines, there was one sanctuary that I believe they were kind of working with one of the dairy farms, and the dairy farm would basically call them and be like, hey, you can either pick up these calves or they're going to become veal. And so that's how they got a lot of their calves.
Why wouldn't they just sell the calves and make money?
Maybe it's inconvenient for them. Maybe it's like, you know, since they are, I'm speculating, maybe it's because since they're like a dairy farm, you know, it's like they have this operation that's strictly for dairy. And this is just, it's basic. I mean, this is how they would think about it. This is not how I would think about it. They're kind of a byproduct of their industry.
Yeah.
And maybe some of them are just like, we don't have anything to do with these animals.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just like, why not squeeze a few extra dollars out of these animals? But yeah.
But what this made me think of was in last week's episode, when we talked about that British hen group that had
the hen trust,
it was a group that advocated for the egg industry, but also rescued hens after they had exhausted their ability to lay eggs. Yeah. And we were speculating, we were like, there's no way that they're not just buying these hens. This makes it seem like maybe they just, the industry is like, we have no use for these hens. You can either come pick them up or we're literally just going to kill them.
Yeah.
So maybe they didn't buy them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess that's entirely possible.
My last part.
Sure.
Tony Kanal from No Doubt. So soft spoken.
So gentle. Gentle human being.
Seemed like a very great person.
Met him at the Animal Rights Conference last year. Sold him a shirt.
Not last year. I was there last year.
2 years ago. Last time I was in LA.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. He was a nice addition to this documentary just because I enjoy his presence as a human being. I guess on that note about things that I didn't really know about, they detailed the down industry, like the goose down industry, and they really explained what the down feathers are versus sort of the outer layer of feathers. And I guess I just had never really thought about that. I just kind of assumed that like every feather was getting plucked.
Yeah,
but
obviously
when you look at a goose, not every feather is this tiny little fluffy feather. So I thought that was interesting. And then, you know, putting forth the idea that it's this traumatic thing for them to regrow the feathers. I just didn't know that they regrew the feathers. I just kind of assumed it was a one and done thing. And then talking about how it's like, these like really bristly feather stalks or whatever have to bust through the skin again. I assumed it was like a follicle of hair growing in the same spot. Yeah. That to me, I was like, that seems like a really brutal thing to happen to an animal.
# the downside of the down industry.
System of Down.
System of Down.
After music right there.
and then the last one was how they cut off the skin from the backsides of sheep so that it prevents infections. That's also something I did not know.
Seems like the opposite way to prevent an infection is to cut off a large chunk of someone's back skin.
It certainly does. Yeah. Very, very gross and horrific.
Yeah. All right. Let's transition over into some critiques of the film.
Let's.
And I will keep it going with these things that we didn't really know about or things that we didn't know too much about. So I felt like, you know, the film does 20 minutes of these are the sanctuary people and then talks about the animals. Some of the sections of various animals were, I never felt like any of them went on for too long. Some of them were like the appropriate length and some seemed incredibly short.
Mm-hmm.
One of the shortest ones was the section on animal testing. And they talk about how pigs had been used for animal testing. And I knew this fact, but it's not something that's in my head. Like when I think about animal testing, I think mice, rabbits, monkeys for the most part.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, I've read accounts of pigs being used for various forms of testing. I have literally never been to a sanctuary where they've ever mentioned animal testing whatsoever. I've never really, like, you know, see that in the literature. And so I was like, oh, this is so fascinating. And that section felt like it was 2 minutes long. I wanted more from that one.
Well, actually, I would have to go back and watch it, but was there even an animal testing section, or was that just the pig section that they mentioned the animal testing in?
There was a animal testing section because there was a title card that came up and it was like, this many animals are used, 95% of them don't fall under the Animal Welfare Protection Act because they're like rodents and okay. like these like low level animals that aren't afforded the same protection okay. as like a monkey would be.
Yeah. So then definitely the fact that I misremembered that also points to the fact that it was probably too brief of a section.
Yeah. To me, that's just such a fascinating aspect.
And there seemed to be one person in particular that probably knew a lot about it because there was the one person that worked at the animal sanctuary that I put down this quote, it's slightly paraphrasing, but they said something along the lines of, I'll never say no to a medical research animal because they don't get out, they die.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very, like, it was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal. On that note, something that I don't know if this is a criticism, but I wanted to talk about it with you. There was a quote from one of the sanctuary workers. I want to say it was someone from Woodstock, but I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it was just Farm Sanctuary. And it was towards the end of the film, and this person said, I don't know how they forgive us. No other animal is more abused than farm animals. And we hear that all the time, but we normally hear that in terms of this sort of the big picture. This is how many animals are used for food. It's 98 whatever percent of the animals that are killed in the U.S., are for food and hens have horrible lives and all of this stuff. But on like an individual level, I don't know if you could make the case. Like I'm thinking about like monkeys that are subjected to these psychological experiments for years. And I remember reading They All Had Eyes by Michael Schlusher. And he was talking about how he felt he was someone that was a vivisectionist, someone who tests on animals. And, he was talking about how the monkeys were particularly bad because you could tell that they knew tomorrow was going to be the same thing. Whereas like a rat, he's like, I couldn't tell if they knew what was really happening to them. So I don't know. It just had me thinking about the nature of that like hens have it really brutal for, you know, however many months that they're kept in those cages before they're killed. But you have, you know, like monkeys being subjected to psychological torture and all sorts of other horrible things. Like being aware of their situation and yeah. knowing that it's going to be the same every day for the rest of their lives. I don't know if I could stand by the statement that farm animals have it the worst.
It's bleak.
Yeah.
That is, it's, I guess it's subjective, but I do agree with you.
If I like gun to my head had like a choice, I would rather be the chicken than the monkey.
I guess
I would rather go through a lot of pain in a shorter period of time versus a lot of pain drawn out.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure most people would agree with that too.
Yeah.
So I guess you're right, Andy. Maybe it's not subjective. If this was, what is it? Not Price is Right. Family Feud. If this was Family Feud, that would be the number one. That would be the number one choice.
Yes, it would. Okay. All right. Let's go back to the beginning of the film. And work our way through with some criticisms.
When they refer to animals as it.
Multiple times. But actually, I want to talk about that more extensively. I thought that the beginning of this film went on for too long. I thought that the section where they're introducing all these different farmed animal sanctuaries, workers, went on for so long that after 20 minutes I went, is this going to end? Like, it just was like, we get it. You met an animal and your eyes were open, and it felt like it was one story after the other. At that point, I did not feel like there was a roadmap. I did not see, you know, where is this film going? How are they going to build a compelling story out of this? What kind of structure do they have? Even like, I was like, I can't expect for a narrative arc at this point, but I just want some sort of structure. And it wasn't until about the 20-24 minute mark when they actually broke into the section about different types of animals. Did you feel that way at all, or were you into it?
No, I do agree. I enjoyed the stories, but I do agree with you that I too was kind of like, I'm not sure what's going to happen in this movie, and I probably would not have enjoyed it if it was an hour and 15 minutes of just that. I think that would be, I could enjoy that for about the length that it was.
Yeah.
So to their credit, if it had gone on any longer, I think I would have been like, oh, this is kind of boring, but it could have been shorter, but I think it was not an inappropriate length, but I do agree with you that they didn't lay out what was going to happen in the movie until, so once you get in that 20 minutes, once you get 20 minutes in, I think you realize what the rest of the movie is going to be like.
Yeah. I was checking my watch at about 15 minutes in, and I was like, how much more of this do we have? Is this an hour and 13 minutes of this? And if it was lengthier versions of each person's story and we focused on six of them and that's the whole thing, that'd be more a la Peaceable Kingdom, then I feel like I would have been okay with it. But the fact that it was these short things where you're never really getting to the heart of the matter, it was just, I don't know. I wish that they had trimmed it down there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But it's already a pretty short movie, so maybe they felt like they had to pad it.
Maybe.
But I feel like, I don't know, they could have maybe included those during the animal sections or something. I don't know.
That's true, because I think they continued to. I think they did include some of them.
Yeah, because they definitely didn't do all 15 people, all 15 sanctuaries right in that first 20 minutes. Yeah, yeah. But
on the other end of the movie, I actually thought, I do have a criticism, Andy. I thought that the environmental piece was unnecessary.
I agree. I agree.
And out of place.
Very out of place and unnecessary. And it felt like it was given short shrift, and it felt like, yeah, it didn't fit unless they made the connection that, like, the stuff that we've been talking about in the last few regular episodes of the environment matters because sentient beings, humans and non-human animals, live in it. But instead, it's just like this quick thing to be like, oh, also the environment, like, you should care about the environment, and now we're going to peace out. It felt like I felt the transitions in this film weren't super stellar, so to speak. But I think that one specifically was kind of this jarring transition, and the fact that they didn't really spend any time talking about, I don't want to say health, but just like someone being like, I didn't think that I could get, you know, all the nutrients I needed, and I learned that I could, you know, like, if they maybe also included that towards the end, It would have been too much, I think, but it would have felt like not as weird for them to take this hard left turn into the environmental territory.
I don't know. I'll say this. I'm glad that they didn't do a health section. Like, I
me
think,
too. Me too.
Because I think that in not because I believe health movies can't have some place in all of this, but more so because I'm tired of vegan-ish movies like this one and like all the other ones we talk about. I'm tired of them feeling like they have to have this, like, all right, we're a vegan movie, so that means we have to do the animal section, we have to do the health section, we have to do the environment section. And every movie is just, if it's like there's just three sliders, every movie is just like a different amount of each one. And I'm like, we don't need that. There's already, I can watch, if I wanted to know about the health or the environmental stuff, there's already 17 other movies I could watch about. And that's how I felt about the environment. I was like, this isn't, not only is it not adding anything that the other movies haven't done, but I even felt like if I was not vegan, that wouldn't have really done much for me, because unless I was already someone who was like, wow, I'm a big environmental person, I didn't connect to the environment at all in that section. Whereas like the rest of the movie, it's like I'm connecting to these stories, I'm connecting to these animals I'm seeing, but I just didn't really connect to the environmental section.
Yeah, the environmental section was pretty lackluster. I think it was mostly like Gene Bauer and Erica Meyer talking. Erica Meyer was like clearly just sort of reciting some talking points, and neither of them seemed particularly engaged in that whole thing.
And Erica Meyer from Compassion Over Killing, like, yeah. Environment is not Compassion Over Killing's main thing, right? Like, I thought it was
They do, like, a lot of corporate campaigns and stuff like that. But, yeah, you think that they would have, like, no shade at Erica Meyer. I think she's great and yeah. She does great work. But, I don't know. It kind of feels like when you have animal people reciting environmental stuff, it's just, like, these are the talking points that we've all been given as vegans. It's not, like, if you got, like, Demo from Cowspiracy that's, like, you know, whatever at the Sustainability Institute of Molloy College, you're like, okay, this is a guy that like deals with this shit yeah. and knows what he's talking about versus the person that just spent an hour talking about the ethics of eating animals. And then you switch to the environmental thing. People could question their motives for whatever environmental message they're giving you.
And what I was bringing up Erica for was because I thought that she was mostly only in it for the environmental section. And I was like, that's weird because I'm like, I didn't think Compassion Over Killing was like an environmental organization. And I thought they maybe misutilized her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she could certainly have been used much better in other sections of the film or in a different film. I don't know. It just, the whole thing, I mean, because the environmental section was about 10 minutes long. And honestly, if they had cut that out and just made this a really nice hour-long thing that's easy for people to digest, you know, maybe that doesn't get them into theaters or consideration for a film festival or, you know, I don't really know. Obviously, there's short films, but yeah, it felt like they could have been like a really tight film if they knocked off 5 minutes from the beginning and 10 minutes from the end. And I wouldn't have minded if they elaborated on certain sections in the middle that I was talking about, especially like the animal testing, but... Yeah, I feel like the film was so close to being a really tight film, and it just felt a little sloppy at times.
I will say about the length of the film, loved it. Loved the length. No, but in all seriousness,
predictable.
I do think that the fact that it is only an hour and 13 minutes is great. I think that it makes it so much easier to recommend to people and to have those people actually be like, oh yeah, you could say this movie's about an hour long and someone's like, oh, I have an hour of my life to do something.
Yeah.
Versus like a, you know, let's go see Avengers Infinity War. It's 2.5 hours long. It's like, okay, this is the rest of my day that I'm going to do this. But in all seriousness, it's like, I feel like the length is a selling point of this movie. I think for what it's trying to do. It's beautiful. Can't recommend the length of this movie enough.
Coincidentally, 1 hour and 13 minutes is the exact amount of time Paul likes to spend on the treadmill every morning. Fits perfectly into his life. Okay, before we talk about the animals as it thing, I will bring up Tony Kanal one more time. Because he comes in around the 49-minute mark, which is the first time they interview a person of color. Mm-hmm. I believe he's the only person of color that is interviewed. There's a few, you know, people that are sort of featured but never interviewed, the children in the PALS program at the Gentle Barn, and there's a few other people towards the end. But it was an overwhelmingly white film, and I guess that had me reflecting on that. I can't really think of any sanctuary owners that I know that are people of color. So I don't know what that speaks to, what, you know, whatever, but it did feel like this is the type of film that would only speak to a certain section of the public.
I agree. I was happy that it wasn't all men.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of women. I think that speaks to how many women are leaders in this movement, mm-hmm. or people that are maybe not leaders, like in terms of like social media and publicity, but they're the ones that are like doing the work, founding the sanctuaries and like running shit. Yeah. So I did think that was nice.
Yeah. And they gave specific mention to, which was the sanctuary that did the big rescue?
Animal Place.
When they were talking about that, the woman that runs that, and they were saying like it was one of the volunteers, I think, was saying like, oh yeah, we come in and we do this really hard work and it's a really tough couple of days, but then we hand it off basically to this woman who like is doing this nonstop all the time.
Yeah, I think that was Kim at Animal Place. I spent a week in Animal Place and I thought it was like a really fantastic sanctuary.
Is that the one that has like the cages that you can go into and stuff like that?
They do. Yeah, they have the Brave the Cage tour,
which I think is cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And the people that I know that travel and do that are really cool people. All right, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
These are my biggest gripes with the film, because the editing and all that stuff is, it's kind of whatever. I think overall it's a very well put together film. Early on, as you've mentioned, one of the original people that they interview in the intro section refers to animals as it, like multiple times, mm-hmm. multiple times. And it was about his one animal, right? And they were a pig or a cow.
Buddy.
And he named what?
Buddy.
Buddy. Buddy. And he just kept saying it. I took it home and played with it. And then eventually refers to the animal as him. But I was like, good Lord, man, get it together.
Yeah, it is. It was very noticeable. And I thought it was weird because, like you pointed out, and I think this happened at a different point with someone else talking too, where they would just keep saying it. And then they would say, yeah, her name was so-and-so. She was really great. She was blah, blah, blah. She was blah, blah, blah. And so it's like after they, it's weird when they're talking about the animal, they're only referred to as it until it's like now they have an identity and now we refer using he or she pronouns, yeah. which is what they did in the movie. But I thought that was really weird. It's like with this first guy, he's like, his name was Buddy. He was great. He was my best friend, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, it's a shoot. You know, the animal is a he that you're calling. Why not just call them a he the whole time?
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to do this reveal.
It
almost reminds you of the reveal that Jenny Brown from Woodstock has a prosthetic leg, right? They do whole interview, and they're talking about this cow with the prosthetic legs or the cast or whatever. And then they do, like, they pan down, and you see her leg, and you're like, oh, okay, it's a special connection because of this.
Yeah,
and
they're playing soccer.
Yeah, which was a pure delight watching a cow play soccer. Oh, God, that cow was so good. So many good animals in this film. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Moby refers to animals as it in the film. And I actually believe the famous Moby quote that was like, could you look in an animal in its eyes and tell them that your life is more important than it or something like that. And that's like a quote that I've seen plastered up at farmed animal sanctuaries. And I'm just like, come on, like change it to they or something. Or
Andy, you know what I'm realizing? That, because I will say this, it was this podcast and you pointing this out that had changed my mind about that, or that had even was probably something that I had never even thought about before you had pointed it out to me. But I realized that most of my vegan friends refer to animals as it. Like
so weird.
It makes so much sense to me why not to do that, as you've pointed out to me.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if most people just have not had it pointed out to them.
That's entirely possible. Maybe I should make a sticker or a shirt addressing it.
That's honestly, Andy, that's not a bad idea, because I feel like, especially my friends that do it, many of them, I know that they would be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to stop doing that. And then it would never be a thing ever again. It's just, I feel like it's just something that's never been pointed out to them before.
Yeah, entirely possible.
And I will say this, to my fault, I don't always point it out to them. I don't know. Sometimes it's just hard to, like, you're in the middle of having this conversation and then
you had to keep a little air horn in your pocket. Yeah. Like, bow, 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 bow. Animals are not it. Someone, but, not something.
It's hard to sometimes interject it into a conversation where you're like, oh, this is going to break up the flow of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I think the more that you become attuned to it, that you hear it more. And it's almost like, I don't want to say like an act of violence or something, but it really sticks out when you keep hearing people refer to animals as it. Even when it's like the family dog and people refer to the dog as it, and you're like, this is a family member, you know?
Yeah. I will say, it makes me feel better when I hear babies referred to as it. Like, it makes me feel like, okay, this person is just referring to all unidentified, like, people or animals as it type deal. Obviously, I'm being slightly sarcastic, and I would hope that babies are not its either, but...
And we don't, Paul. Some might say that animals are people.
Some might say that. But you know what I mean? It does make me feel like, oh, okay. Because I think that even though I am 1,000,000% behind the fact that I do believe our language and the language that we use shapes how we feel about these things, and that's why it is important. I think that, I don't remember what I was going to say about, I guess I'll put a period at the end of this. I don't remember what I was going to say. Well, but
were you essentially just sort of like giving people a pass? Like, I think it's important. Language shapes our world, but some people just don't realize, or.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people don't realize. And I bet that most vegans would be like, oh, you're right, I'm going to change this. I would hope.
Yeah.
But I think that most non-vegans, would be like 50-50. Yeah. I think 50% of them would be like, oh, you're right, I refer to my dog as he, so I probably shouldn't refer to this cow as it. And then half people would just be like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But I do think I do think it is important.
Yeah. It is important. Yes.
I know. Every time that I'm saying the word it correctly, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. And I guess pro tip out there, if you don't know the animal, if you don't know how to refer to the animal, just use the gender neutral they. It's real easy.
Yeah.
I think there was someone in this film that kept saying, like, his first like animal was he or she. I brought he or she home, and I'm like, just say they, bro. It's yeah. cool. Just like,
but they were like 50% there.
Yeah, I know. It was like, I brought them home. I gave them some water. They liked to play in the backyard. It's very simple. Once you start practicing, it's easy. And like, I don't think that as like advocates for animals or social justice that like language is the be all end all. Like, obviously there are a lot of people with great intentions, and they're not privy to the education. They're maybe not following the right Facebook groups that talk about this stuff, whatever it is.
They're not listening to the right podcast.
They're certainly not paying $1 a month to us to get this great information. So I don't, it's not like a thing that I feel like you need to like jump down someone's throat about, right? But I think it is. I think that if we are referring to animals as it, we are literally referring to them as objects. And how do we expect the general public to view animals as sentient beings with rich inner lives of their own if we refer to them as it, something that designates something as an object?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
So
language is important.
It sure is. It sure is.
They sure is.
They sure is. Okay, so the other big grievance of mine was that there were several people in this film that were interviewed that essentially gave the impression that everything was cool the way it used to be done. So in the beginning, it was a Pigs Peace volunteer and said something along the lines of, things have changed from 40 or 50 years ago with our grandparents. And so when I hear that, it's like, okay, yes, things are vastly different, but it almost gives the impression that there would have been no reason to avoid harming animals back then because things were cool with the animals. And it sort of is saying the way they are treated back then is fine. And then also in like the wolf section, I forget, it was like, what was it, Padre's place or Pedro's place? I forget exactly what it was, but the person said, it didn't used to be bad, but now it is. Like literally saying it didn't used to be bad. And talking about like the exploitation of animals, and you also have the Soledad goats farmers. We're talking about factory farms as well. So like, that's not the main point that the film was trying to make. They didn't really dwell on it too much, but I think that someone could easily latch onto that because they never have any I wish they had a section where they talked about this duck came from a local backyard butcher. This duck came, all ducks apparently, like these animals came from, someone that was raising a quote unquote humane pig farm or whatever. And I feel like they missed out an opportunity with that because all they talked about are basically how bad factory farms are and straight up saying it was cool 50 years ago. But it's like, okay, maybe the technology and the availability of products and whatnot have advanced to a point where it's easy now, and maybe it wasn't easy or even possible back then, but it doesn't mean that it was ethically okay necessarily, or that we should look at it as ethically okay and say it was cool back then, but now, it's different. What do you think?
I remembered the first quote. I remembered the person saying this isn't our grandparents' farms or whatever like that. I do remember that one. I don't remember the other ones, but I remember thinking, that's probably what this person's getting at, but I'm glad that they're not going into it as much as some other like straight up vegan or promoting vegan movies have done before, which is people saying things like, literally, it used to be okay and now it's not okay. This person maybe was alluding to it, but I'm glad that they didn't say it flat out. And I do think, like you said, that they did not dwell on that idea really at all. I don't remember those other, and I believe you that they happened, but yeah. I don't remember those other two instances.
I think that because they never had anyone that said something that countered that, that addressed, well, some people think local is good or humane this or cage free that is good, but they're all abused or they're all exploited regardless of how well they're treating. They never had someone representing the opposite end of that spectrum. That I think that even if it was just a few lines, maybe most people forget it after they watch, but for me, they really stuck out. And I think that that's like the one thing, like I would still recommend the film, but it's the one thing that really like truly gives me pause. Like all the stuff that I'm like, oh, I wish they did more of this or shorten it. Like that's whatever. That's just my nitpicks that I have. Cause we're doing a hour and a half, whatever long podcast mm-hmm. about this film. We're doing a podcast potentially longer than the film itself. but to me, that's the thing that I'm like message wise, I felt like Peaceable Kingdom sent a better message, but Peaceable Kingdom never used the word vegan ever, whereas this one does. So I don't know.
Here's what I'll say about it. I agree with you that they never said, oh, even humane raised grass fed cage free stuff is bad. They did not say that. However, I think that the stories that they were trying to get to were more so along the lines of, I had this connection with this cow and I realized I can't eat cows anymore. Like as a flat out thing, yeah. Not like a, I want this cow to be treated better, because I don't think they really focused on the welfare of the animals at all, which I think is good. Like I feel like what they were just saying was, killing cows is bad, and it's not like how they're treated, it's just killing cows is bad.
Every title card between each section was focusing on their treatment, though. In the dairy industry, this happens to cows. In the pig industry, they're castrated without anesthesia.
But it's all stuff that would happen to them regardless of, like, humanely raised or not, right?
Perhaps. I don't remember the exact fact for each one, but I think that it's still focusing on treatment rather than use.
I guess. I still think that I stand by my statement that I think that their message was, have this connection with this animal and realize that you should not be exploiting that animal anymore, like regardless of the means of exploitation. But you're right that they did not mention that. They could have easily said, and even humanely raised meat is this way too.
Or they could have omitted the people saying this other stuff.
That too.
I think that would have been the best thing, the best option. Omitting and then including someone that was offering the objection that the audience member might have, what about humane, what about local, whatever. Yeah. That would be the best option. But I think the fact that they included those lines is a little irresponsible.
I think that they flew under the radar for me. And I think that for most people, they would fly under the radar unless we were specifically looking for those things, which maybe someone that's not vegan would be specifically looking for that way out. I will say that.
Well, but some people just need that one animal, and some people just need that one line that gives them an excuse to not engage.
All right. I don't think it's as big of a qualm for me as it was for you. But
fair enough. Fair enough. I just felt like there was enough lines that reinforced that idea that someone could get that takeaway, you know, even though the overall spirit of the film is obviously that it's bad to exploit animals regardless.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul. The last serious thing that I'll bring up, because I have a few funny things that I want to mention. Something that we often talk about is we want a call to action at the end of a film, right? We want something to inspire us and then tell us what can we immediately go do to address whatever issue this documentary is talking about. And so I liked that at the end of this one, they had a, like, what can I do? What can you do? Title card. And they showed some more shots of animals. And then I was hoping that it would say, go vegan, do this, check out a sanctuary here. But instead, it was just a link to their take action page, which I was like, all right, that's still, you know, cool. That's still giving someone something to go to.
And your critique ends there, right, Andy?
That is exactly where my critique ends, Paul. And, you know, it was, you know, calledtorescuefilm.com/take-action. Pretty easy to remember. And I was like, there has to be more, but that was it. That's all they offered for, like, what can I do now? So I went there just to check it out, see what the resources were. Now, granted, officially this came out in 2016, but their LA premiere was not until November of 2017. So that's like 7 months ago, seven, 8 months ago. So you go to their Take Action page, and there is a Jane Goodall quote. If only we can overcome cruelty to human and animal with love and compassion, we shall stand at the threshold of a new era in human moral and spiritual evolution and realize at last our most unique quality, humanity. And there's pictures of flowers. And then there's two options to click. One says lifestyle support. One says visit a sanctuary. So lifestyle support, I assume that would be a here's how you go vegan thing. And I was like, oh, are they going to link to Vegan Kit? Are they going to link to a vegan outreach thing? Like, what's
Veganuary.
It? Veganuary. What's it going to be? It links to a website that says it's just called ameatfreemonth.org. But the top, it just says a meat free M, like all one word. And then it's just like shopping. It's just, I'm showing it to Paul right now.
It's like jackets and pants and shoes.
And there's a little search bar that you can, you know, look for a keyword, and you type vegan, literally nothing comes up. So there's, I don't know if, yeah, the domain must have gotten purchased, yeah. It lapsed or whatever, but especially because this just came out on YouTube in April.
Not good.
Like 2-3 months ago. You know, if that's the, you know, they don't even say, what can I do? Go vegan. Also visit this website. They literally just give you this website that now is just like, people are like, oh, so I guess veganism is about getting this Mastermind Japan camouflage print jacket, men's, or select straight pants, Paris dark, you know what I, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's so disappointing. And then I was like, okay, well, I'll check out this visit a sanctuary thing. Maybe that'll be good. And it just leads to an error 404 page. Now, this one is under the CFEI domain, so that's Compassionate Farming Education Initiative. And there is, like, the remaining tabs are still up top, and you can visit, there's a sanctuaries tab. So you could still find your way to a thing, but
Let's make it easy for
it. How disappointing is this, Paul, that people could watch this film, and it's not like they can't find other information on the web, whatever, but it's like, I would feel really disheartened if I was all jazzed on this film, and I was like, I'm going to go see what this film, I like the way they present the message, because I've seen What the Health, and I just really didn't like being yelled at because oil's evil for an hour and a half, or whatever, you know, however you're feeling. I like how this film's presenting the message. I want to know what they advocate that I do. And then you just see a shopping page for something unrelated.
Yeah.
Like, it's really deflating. I think we'll send a message to them once we're done recording.
Strongly worded, but constructive message.
Exactly. So that's a bummer.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you have any funny things about this, Paul, that made you laugh?
I mean, I was happy when Will Tuttle came in. No, not too many super laughy moments for me. There was a lot of adorable animals. That was nice.
There was definitely a lot of adorable animals. When, upon finishing the film and seeing that the directors were called, their last names were all Call. There's like two directors were called Call. Named Call. And then like the cinematographer was a different person with the last name Call. And both me and my partner Annie were like, get it, called to action.
Oh.
Or called to rescue.
Is that really what it
is? I don't know. I feel like.
Oh, my God.
Okay. At one point, there is a llama that comes up. It may have even been in the previews, right? The llama comes up and like interrupts the interview.
Yeah.
And the person's like, oh, Dolly, you're so cute.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
Did no.
Dalai Lama?
Oh, that's good.
thought you'd have a bigger reaction than that.
I feel like I've met that llama before. That was at Animal Sanctuary. That's funny, though. Dalai Lama.
All right, Paul. So the final thing that made me laugh was this shot of Ellie from the dental barn. I don't know if you remember this. It's towards the end. And she's being interviewed, and there's a cow next to her. She has her arm on the cow, but it's not the cow's head. It's the cow's butt. The cow's butthole's just, like, right there.
I did not notice that, Andy.
It was a very unfortunate framing. Very unfortunate framing shot.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I did not notice that.
So, yeah, but I mean, otherwise, actually, it was pretty devoid of unintentionally funny moments, which, you know, is
to their credit.
I know, which is our bread and butter, but it is nice to see a film that knows how to not include those things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, okay. So, overall, Paul.
Overall, Paul.
Overall, Paul. That's what they call you. You would recommend the film?
I would recommend the film.
Who'd you recommend it to? Who is this for?
Well, like I said at the top, or in the middle, I don't know. I said this at some point. This film made me want to take my non-vegan friends and family to animal sanctuaries.
Yeah.
So I think it's good for vegans to inspire vegans to maybe do the same thing like it inspired me.
Yeah.
I also think if you're not able to take someone to an animal sanctuary, I think that this is a good substitute for that. So I believe good for vegans and non-vegans. It's not graphic, so it's like you don't... If you're vegan, there's no reason not to watch this, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, we had those critiques, but overall, I would say no reason not to watch this. So, you know, go watch it.
Yeah, you know, I think people have this idea that they have to watch the ultra graphic stuff, the Earthlings, to get reinvigorated in their activism and repledge themselves to veganism and making new vegans. But I think this film could also serve that purpose because it really puts personality into these animals. And to me, that makes me really care about them.
I agree. I agree, Andy. Do we have anything else to say about it?
I think that's all we have to say about that.
Well, let us know what you think. Let us know if you watched it. We'll include the YouTube link, so it's free. Also nice. Very accessible on YouTube. Send us an email, thebeardvegans@gmail.com, or just comment below on the Patreon page, because you special Patreon backers have access to that.
And thank you once again to everyone that has made this episode possible. It's all through your donations.
It is.
Paul, so there's all these sections, and I complained that some of them were too short.
Mm-hmm.
There was one section that was so short that, like, I didn't even notice that it had gone by, right? It was only 7 words long. Like, it went by in a blink of an eye. So do you remember what that section was called?
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are the Bearded Vegan. Nope, that doesn't say that.
But it wasn't overhanded at all. Overhanded? Is that a word?
Who knows?
Yeah, that early on, as you've mentioned, one of the original people that they interview in the intro section refers to animals as it. Like multiple times, mm-hmm. multiple times. And it was about his one animal, right? Was it was like